Hello, everyone. This is Francisco Arias, Director of Technical Services in the Global Domains Division at ICANN. To my right, Marc Blanchet from Biagini, and we both are going to be talking about RDAP, the Registration Data Access Protocol. Let's say the protocol that is intended to replace WIS. This is the agenda for the presentation today. I'm not going to go into the details, but you can see the different sections we have there. So first, a brief introduction. Why are we here? So port 43, who is the current protocol that is used to access the registration data for domain names and IP addresses, among other objects in the internet, has a series of shortcomings. It's an old protocol, was originally developed in the early 80s. So it's unformatted, non-internationalized, provides no authentication, it's insecure. No differentiated access, it's non-extensible, et cetera, et cetera. So all of these shortcomings are the reason why there were several attempts to come up with a replacement for this protocol. But the current effort that we are still going is was started in somewhere in 2010. There were some discussions that arrived in 2011 in the publication of SAC 51, that advisory from the Security Stability Advisory Committee from ICANN recommended the replacement of the WIS protocol. Subsequent to that, the board adopted that advice, and staff was tasked to develop a roadmap to implement these recommendations. That's the roadmap to implement SAC 51. And after that, the effort in the technical community in the ITF started in 2012 to develop this new protocol. And at the same time, there were efforts in ICANN to prepare for that. So as a result, in the agreements of several legacy GTLDs, namely COM, NameBees, InfoWork, the largest ones, it is also, this contractual provision is in the 2012 registry agreement, that's the new GTLD agreement, and it is also in the 2013 register accreditation agreement. So the registrars, most of the registrars also have this provision in their contracts that will allow in a given moment to ICANN to request the implementation of the new protocol. And the latest development in the, yes.
Hi, I'm Luis Gonzalez. We have a comment from the chat room from Scott Hollenbeck. From BraceSign. He says the WIS goes back even further. Consider IRIS, AirWIS, WIS++, et cetera.
Right. That's what I was referring to, previous attempts to replace the WIS protocol. That's certainly true. So the latest development was in March of this year when the RFCs for RDAP were published. So that culminated the effort in the ITF to have the protocol developed. So the goals of RDAP are basically to provide a solution for all the shortcomings that I mentioned in a previous slide, the shortcomings of the Port 43 protocol. And the protocol RDAP, you can think of it as a menu offering us a menu of options of what can be implemented in regards to the policies. The protocol per se does not require a registry to implement certain policy. For example, it doesn't tell you that you have to provide authenticated access or searchability. It defines if you want to do it, how you do it. These are some of the features of the RDAP protocol. It is defined using a very popular and common way to structure data, let's say, called JSON. It's a form of text data. It's web-based. In other words, it's using the HTTP protocol. It's designed to be extended and provides a series of other features. This is an example of, yes, Carson?
Carsten Schiefner, Denik. I just wonder to what extent the earlier efforts, like Iris, for example, the one that you've just named, have been taken into account, or is that like a development that comes totally from scratch?
What I can tell is that development in the ITF, some of the people involved in developing AirDAP, like Andy Newton from ARIM, he was the main author of IRIS, one of the previous attempts. So in that, and there is certainly other people that were involved in that development. So I would think that the answer to your question would be the development of the new protocol took into account the what happened before.
Okay, thanks.
Let's continue. So this is an example of how AirDAP, the first part of the screen, is how AirDAP queries will look like. As you can see, they are URLs, things that you can put in your browser and get data, let's say. And the second part is how the data will look like. As you can see, the data is plain text. It's not intended to be a pre-HTML page. However, it's very structured, and it's trivial to convert this to something that is more user-friendly, let's say. So after the ITF standardized the protocol last March, here at ICANN we started looking at how do we go about implementing AirDAP in the GTLD space. So there are a few questions that we have in mind. For example, is how long after the AirDAP deployment we can turn off port 43. We probably want to leave some time for people to do the migration. So you, let's say we start AirDAP just to come up with an hypothetical date in 2016. We probably want to give a couple years or maybe more, I don't know, to users to migrate from port 43 to AirDAP. Another open question that will need to be resolved with input from the communities, should there remain a requirement to offer a HTML version of the outputs? In other words, something that is more user-friendly. Currently in the both the registry agreement and the registry accreditation agreement, they have a requirement for contracted parties to offer a port 43 and a web version of the output that is more user-friendly. So these are the type of questions that we will need to look in when we go into the implementation of AirDAP. Another question that has come up, and that's the main topic of this presentation, is how do we map the current RDDS policy and contractual requirements into AirDAP. So for example, in the agreements, we have a series of fields that are requested to be shown in RDDS. RDDS is the term that is used in the GTLD space, in the contracts for registries and registrars, to refer to who is both the port 43 and the web-based version. So we need to find a way to map the requirements that are in the existing agreements, policies, et cetera, to map them to AirDAP. So we contracted VIG&E, Mark to my right, to help us study this issue and see if we could develop a first attempt to see how we can map these requirements. I should clarify that the intention here is to have this set of mappings published and shared with the community so that we get input and we have a common agreement and understanding of what should be there in order to implement RDAP in the GTLD space. So the work's still ongoing, and we hope to have something to share with the community after this meeting in Buenos Aires. So I think I covered already this. And with that, Mark.
Thank you, Francisco. So as Francisco was saying, the exercise was to take the various agreements, the advisories, and then the RFCs, and then not blending all together, but actually make a current, you know, output, which is a profile, RDAP profile, essentially. So this presentation is obviously there's a few. You have the slide deck in proceedings. There's a lot of details in this, and this is obviously a straw man, first cut of this. I won't go into every exact, detail because it will take much more time than what we have. So I'll browse through them, and there's a few sections on the RDAP compliance, what is related to registry, registrars, and things like that. So I'll go through them again, quote-unquote fast, in a sense that I may not talk about every possible topic there, but you will have a chance to ask questions later and also to read further. As you see, there's 49 slides, so I won't. So first section is on RDAP protocol compliance, so we're essentially citing here. So what you're seeing here is actually extract on the left side is actually extracts from the current working document, and on the right, the working document which will later be put forward for community review, and then on the right is actually the reference to the different documents that are related to the left-hand side. So, for example, compliant with the various RFCs. Service should must only support HTTPS. RDAP must support GET and ED types of HTTP methods. EDS is a lightweight way to verify the existence of an object without going through the whole transaction. If people are using specific extensions, then fine, but register. There's a IANA RDAP extension registry, so therefore everybody will have a point, a reference to know what this extension is. I'll keep for the last one, which is pretty deep down technical. V4 and V6 as a whiz. Don't extend without registering what you're doing. So these are kind of high-level protocol compliance. Responses to RDAP queries. If you support an IDN, IDN domains, then you should support, the queries for IDN domains. You may, especially if you have multiple languages in the response, then you should tag them with the proper language identifier. And there's a little difference between if it's in within the GCard object of the response or in the journal, but I'm not going into the details of this. RDAP answers are expected to be the same across all RDDS service. So, if the answer on whois is X, then with different formatting, but it should be the same answer X for on over RDAP, which is kind of obvious. But details that should, you know, leading space or which were actually present in a ways are less of an issue for RDAP, but you know, are here for completeness, you know, line feeds and stuff. Again, skipping a few that are way down detail. RDAP has a help query, which is useful for people to understand what you're providing as a service. So, you know, providing some usage information and policy and stuff like that. Well, I'm moving over truncated objects, which are pretty down technical. So if responses for specific domain name queries, right, so some information about where the response comes from and referrals and stuff like that. Domain ID of the handle, top-level domain object, so the internalization part, which is A-label versus U-label part. Status, I'll come back to some of the status later. Must contain a public ID member to identify the IANA registrar identifier from the IANA registrar ID registry. Details on the domain on the name servers, and again, those are roughly, while the text is maybe long for you to read real time, but it's essentially imported from OWASP as is. Sometimes adapted because it's RDAP, but roughly the same with the actual specific member identifiers of the JSON response. So we do have GCard supports both structured address and unstructured addresses. Obviously, it's better for everybody if we can support structured address, but it's not a must given that, you know, sometimes it's not possible. It's old data which is not structured, but the actual container GCard can support structured addresses, so if you have them, it's actually good. Variants. So same as always, you should return APP status code, and I'll get another comment about this later. Obviously, DNSSEC. And registrant entities. So these are for domain name requests, which is the main topic of this. Obviously, we're not talking about anything about addresses. It's not. It's out of scope of here. Specific to registry. Search by the RFC. Currently, the RFCs that were there were discussion on search capabilities within the RDAP working, the WORDS working group, which was the ITF name for the RDAP work, about search, advanced search capabilities, but that was put aside. So therefore, right now, they don't have facilities in, to do binary and, you know, kind of AND and OR in a RFC spec. So that which is, you know, something that is available in OWASP. So therefore, this is kind of a remaining topic to be looked at. Reporting requirements. So essentially, we try to adapt to RDAP. So we use the current requirements for reporting for OWASP and then try to adapt them to the RDAP case. And it's roughly a mapping, a direct mapping, but obviously with the RDAP specifics on it. As you see, there's a lot of data of what I'm showing, and I understand that, you know, I'm skipping fast. We'll have time for questions, but it's more the intent is give you a good preview where we're going so that you could get a feeling where we go. So part of the RFC set, there's a INA Bootstrap Service Registry. So if you have a TLD, then you would register your base URL of your RDAP service in that registry. So therefore, we say, you know, please register. And then obviously available through over IPv4 and IPv6 entities. So this is how you would do the lookup using the FN field. Again, I'm not necessarily going into all the details. Oh, what is an entity? It's, something which is not a domain name.
Right,
and not a name server or something. So handled any other thing that is not, you know, a name server or a domain name. And so okay, so registries must support queries for registrar objects, an example of an entity using the IANA ID of the registrar. And that return object should contain the various information about the contact, which is again contained in the G card. The G card for maybe. I haven't talked about it, but G-card is the JSON version of a V-card. So it's just another way of representing a V-card, but in a JSON syntax. Name server RDAP queries, must support. You could query either by the name, host name, or the IP address. Something about the initialization and IPv4 and IPv6. Again, initialization. Notices. Events. So in the JSON response, there's a structure that defines the various events, and obviously we're kind of mapping the events that were part of the WIS, which were listed line by line into the appropriate structure. So again, the idea we're gaining here is more structured data, and that's what JSON is giving us. So here what we did is essentially mapping what is existing in WIS into the proper RDAP JSON structures. So these are for registrars, must contain the abuse role and may contain the reseller role when applicable. There's a concept of a referral. So whenever you don't have the information for a query, you could refer to the appropriate party. And this is essentially says, please use the mechanism defined in the RFC. There's a few remaining issues that need to be resolved. Right now, the RDAP status codes are incomplete in a sense that they do not compare to what is possible in WIS, which is in WIS specs. It says essentially pass on the EPP status codes through WIS. Well, the RDAP current specifications do not have those mappings. Therefore, there is if we want to do the same as we did in WIS, which is pass on the EPP status codes, then we would have to do the same. There's a draft right now who is actually talking about this exact issue. So that could be one way to solve this issue. Lookup by IANA registrar ID is not defined in the RDAP RFCs, so that's probably a minor fix to do with a little extension. As I said before, search more complex search with AN, OR, and NOT are not defined in base RDAP RFCs, so it needs to be done. And also, in context of thin registries, where the OIS is actually two set of connections, one through the registry and then a handle to the registrar, so you get the additional information. So this is not really defining the RDAP RFCs and would have to be looked at. There's a way to do this in the format, which is called links, but we'll need to, dig into it a bit more on those details. So I know this is fast. We're here for answering your questions, and obviously this is not the end of it. And Francisco, you want to conclude before taking questions, I guess?
Yes. Just give me a second just to finalize on the conclusions. The next step is just one slide. So as we can see, there are still work that needs to be done in order to define the details that need to be taking into account to implement RDAP in both GTLD registries and registrars. There are a few that may require some action in the ITF to, for example, the support for all the EPP status codes. It's something that is not immediately available, and that requires some action in the ITF, which is already ongoing. There is already a proposal for that. There is a series of open questions that I mentioned before in the introduction, and how to retire port 43, at what point, and whether to keep the web base in the sense of HTML requirement for registries and registrars, since RDAP is indeed a web based protocol. As I said before, also the intention is to have a draft profile that can be posted for public comment and review. At this point, it will seem like we will be able to have something to share with you by the end of summer. That's the current thinking, that when we can have something that can be shared and we can start getting your feedback on the all these issues. And with that, I will open the floor for questions. Rubens?
I have just 9 questions or comments. So.
What if we go one and then the next person and then we come back?
So the first one was a comment that you mentioned end of summer, but we are not in the summer because
right.
You are living too much in the northern hemisphere, so there is...
Good point. Thank you. Maxim
Alzoba. First question.
Here, Luis Gonzalez. For the people in the remote participation, could you please say your name and your affiliation? Thank you.
Maxim Alzoba, FITED. Actually, there were lots of conversations about consumer confusion. Consumers usually tend to use human-readable formats. What I mean, having 2 pages of the something which is good for computers, because you cannot even count with your eye the how many dots and commas there, and you won't be able to understand if the format is correct this time. And it's first question, because before killing quiz, it would be really nice to let people see what does it mean, because currently customers, to some extent, can understand what's there in the quiz response. It will just no longer be this way. And the second question is, there are lots of words about the registry contract, which are currently far from being true. Like, definition of reseller is not there. There are no obligations to support this format, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it would be really nice if you have conversation with your contractual compliance before implementation, because other way we will say, okay, we don't have to do that. That's it. And it would be really nice to have something we can really implement, because there are lots of policies we have to be compliant to, a big, really big contract, and it's good to have something we can physically implement instead of just saying to compliance, yes, we're trying, and to you, no, we don't have to. So thanks.
Thank you, Maxim. This is Francisco Arias. So two questions. The first one regarding the format, how things look like. That's why I had the question, the open questions regarding when and to retire Port 43 and whether to we need to keep the HTML version of WIS output. Which, from what you are saying, is the answer to that is probably yes, because we need something that the users can understand. RDAP, like I said, is not meant to be used by to be seen by the end users. It's the plumbing that is below with structured data that can be converted to something that is user-friendly. So that was the answer to your first question. Regarding the specific requirements, what we show here is a first try. It's not even finalized, but we wanted to show you the kind of things that we are thinking in developing this first draft on the what we call the operational profile. Thank you. Was it Jim or Carson? Jim?
You might as well go down the line. thank you, Francisco, for this. I guess I have two questions. In the category of sharing, you've commented about having a fuller proposal and document to share in a few months. But what about these slides? Will these be available and distributed for review now?
Sure, yeah. I think they are already published. The link is in the...
They're not on the website, anyway.
I think they are, yeah.
Yeah, they are. The
full schedule? Just now.
Yeah, on the full schedule. I looked on the full schedule. I did. I'll figure it out. I did a reload and didn't see him, but that's fine. So could you say a little more about the overall process for what's going to happen for the approval and acceptance and acknowledgement of the profile that you're putting out, what that really means. And then as a related question, similarly with respect to the overall timeline when you would expect for that all of that process to be done, and I'll give you a little bit of extra context on why I asked the timeline question. Your last question there about being able to respond with the base URL as a pointer to the registrar. Up to this point, it's been suggested, at least verbally, that the path for requiring the RDAP service, especially amongst the legacy TLDs, will be when all registries are thick, which really only refers to when VeriSign moves along. And if that's true, that last question about needing a pointer to the registrar base URL, you know, is not relevant. It then becomes not important to be able to answer that question. So I'm wondering if you're still on the path of the timeline not ending until after VeriSign is thick. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. This is Francisco. So regarding the adoption of TIGWIS, there is a session shortly after this one. Don't remember the exact time, but it's in the agenda. I think on that you will you can see more details on what's going on there and what is the timing. The intention here is to provide a solution that can work for TIN or TIC registries no matter what. We think that it should be very simple, and it's just a matter of providing a reference using the RDAP format that already exists and just defining where. That way, there can be a solution in case there are TIN registries, which for the moment is the status quo. But I get your point. Once there are tick registries, we may not need this. Once all the utilities are tick, that's what I meant.
Okay, so just to clarify, you're not committed to a particular timeline, but you're creating an option for a shorter timeline than waiting for registries to move.
Right. So the question on the timeline of TQIS is different. It leaps on its own, and it may take, I don't know, it may take a long time for all the registrations to be actually moved from the currently thin registries to have all the data so that they can answer all those questions. So there may be a need to have a temporary solution that allows those thin registrations to be answered. That's the thinking behind having this solution. And we think it's very trivial. That's why we don't think it's a big issue to have.
Okay, thank you.
Jordan?
All right. So I have a question leading into a couple comments, I think. So the question is, I found it surprising that you started off talking about all the ways that Whois is really lame, and poor 43 is really lame. I agree with you. And then you basically said, so now we're going to do this exercise to translate all the ways that it works under this like shiny new protocol so it behaves as similarly as possible to the old lame thing. And I guess I'm curious as to why that's a reason. So clearly there are policies, ICANN policies, that have to be adhered to, like consensus policies, community policies. But there's a lot of elements, I think, in the current contractual regime and or current practices around Port 43 Whois and Whois that basically are that way because we have an old crappy protocol. And so if we just go and reinstantiate everything in the new protocol, we lose the opportunity to gain those benefits. So I guess I'm asking, are we trying to make any attempt to distinguish between things that are policies that the community has agreed upon versus implementation decisions that were made previously that were predicated on the fact that we were using Whois before, Port 43 Whois before? So I'll ask that question, then I have two other quick comments to follow up.
So this is Francisco again. So I will not characterize what we are trying to do here as trying to replicate Whois in RDAP. That's certainly not the intent. It's more about what you said is to... we have policies and contracts that are already there. And so, for example, is what fields should be in the output. That's something that is already defined and was further clarified in the recent Whois advisory, right? So those kind of things are the ones that we are looking at to have defined in the profile. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I guess I think it probably makes sense for folks as we take a look at the work that's been done so far to look and see if maybe there's disagreement as to whether some of those things are requirements that the community has agreed upon versus just implementation decisions that were made in the past based on the limitations of the existing protocol. But yeah, I understand where you're coming from.
Mark Blasche, just to add, we had really in our mind what you just said, instead of not trying to re-import, I don't know, crap in the sense of the technical term, into more structured data. So we tried to do as much as we could, and most of the work was more mapping an element of information into the new structure. So I hope that the what we have done up to now doesn't import too much of bad stuff, but please, when we'll have the document, please, comment and provide, suggestions.
Sure. Okay, so two comments then on steps going forward. The first comment I would make is I think it's important that in addition to trying to do this more abstract work of thinking how this stuff ought to apply, that we want to get some experience as quickly as possible with RDAP and with it using real production systems. And so I would certainly encourage, to the extent you can think about a way, as opposed to requiring that registrars come along and do RCEPs. I guess registrars wouldn't have to. To the extent that you would require registries to do RCEPs because you continue to consider this a registry service as a precondition of like starting to make the service available and so on, there's some fast track to be able to start to make the service available so people can start to query it and see what works and which operational practices work and like are there things that are being suggested that that in the profile that are problematic for whatever reason. And the second thing I would say is, if you want this transition to be both successful and I think adopted as quickly as possible by the community, you want to make incentives for people to move away from port 43 whois to this. And one, a key factor of that is you don't want to force people to, for a really long period of time, maintain two stacks of technology. And so to that extent, I would say as soon as an incentive to adopt this could be you can get rid of your old crappy whois server. And so I would say as soon as you get agreement on what the profile should look like, which we can do in parallel using the stuff I said about, then you say, okay, you can turn off port 43 whois as soon as you've adopted the new scheme, because like you said earlier, Francisco, you'll still, I think it does make sense to continue to have the web-based version, so you wouldn't lose access, even in the event that people had become dependent on the old system, there would be at least some backup that they could use in terms of the web-based alternative. But I think that would create a nice incentive to have people move over quickly if they could turn off their old stuff in the process.
Thank you, Jordan. Point taken. Do you want to?
Yeah, I was just going to add that, as you probably got, the RDAP is so web-friendly that your web interface is probably going to be, you know, almost a very thin gateway to the RDAP. At least that's, you know, one technical way to do it.
Okay, so we have a remote comment, and I believe next will be Carsten, Andrew, and we're okay.
Okay, first, we get a comment from Scott Hollenbeck from VeriSign. He says, there is a complimentary workshop scheduled for the 19th of July in Prague ahead of ITF 93 that's focused on discussing many of the RDAP technical questions Francisco described. A call for participation and discussion topics will be coming out shortly.
Yeah, and I will add that I already asked Mark to see if we can participate there. Carsten?
Yeah. Carsten Schiefner again. My question builds, I guess, a little on to what Maxime has just recently asked for, and that is, to what extent are the efforts like that directly circle around the building of RDAP as a protocol would relate to other activities in terms of like requirements for registrars, but as well as, because I just prior to this session here, I've attended the law enforcement agencies meets the registrars session. So I just wonder to what extent you guys are making sure that like all aspects are being well put into that new protocol so that we won't well face later on the situation where we would think like even although it's extensible that not all aspects have been put into that protocol from the very beginning. So are there sort of like liaisons between the various activities, or this essentially, I guess, is my question.
So within ICANN there is a coordination between the different types, the different initiatives related to RDDS or WHOIS, whatever you want to call it. I think it's led by Jamie, right? Yeah, Jamie Hedlund. He's leading this coordination of all the different efforts that are related to RDDS.
For example, the core protocol work obviously happens at the IETF, and I'm not entirely sure whether those folks being in the process of specifying the protocol are really relating to stuff that is going on elsewhere that would have an impact on their way how things should be specified. But if that's sort of like assured, then I'm happy. Thanks.
I couldn't. Mark Blasche, you know, nobody can promise, you know, something we don't know in the future. But it was clearly in the, well, I've been, you know, participating in the WHERES working group, which is the working group name for the RDAP work. And there was a clear, overview. There's even a document that describes what a survey of what people were doing. And so we took it into account everything we could. We knew at that time about what is required, and knowing that, and with the actual assumption that we're doing a container transport protocol, the policy is not ITF business. This is, you know, and then make it extensible in the proper way, technical way, which is structured and with a registry and all that stuff, so that, you know, for additional requirements, you know, they could be put later on into the protocol. Having said that, so it's kind of the injuring version of we did our best, but it's not perfect, but it certainly has all the hooks to extend it for additional requirements as they go. And moreover, there's more authorization, authentication, and stuff that may be related to law enforcement, for example, is something that is also was also taken into account. So I cannot say yes or no, but on the technical side, we worked hard to get it possible for additional requirements later.
Fair enough for me, thanks.
Andrew?
Hi, Andrew Sullivan. I really want to echo this remark that we heard earlier that we want the incentives to get off 43 in favor of this new protocol. And I want to suggest that the JSON format that that the working group came up with is sort of trivially translatable into the sort of text, you know, garbage that you get on port 43 now. And if somebody wanted to build, somebody with, you know, money because they, like, you know, sold a bunch of TLDs, for instance, wanted to build a new proxy that would talk from, you know, from this service to a port 43 forwarder that just, you know, dumped ASCII on the output, that doesn't seem to me to be, you know, the work of multitudes or even a big project. You could probably find a couple of summer students who could hammer it together. And that would be a great way to give you an incentive to move to the new code. You get to ditch all of your old crappy port 43 code that you're maintaining, and it's written in like COBOL or something, right? And you can instead have nice new code that's written in, you know, language of your choice, Go or whatever, and it'll be really smooth and fun, and you can maintain it forever. And then you don't have this problem, because that was part of the goal of this. We already learned from IRIS. The IRIS effort was, of course, to boil every ocean there was in order to get, you know, the previous effort. That didn't work, and it made a lot of people at the IETF unhappy. So what Mark suggests is exactly right. A number of people, and I should say I'm speaking only for myself, a number of people at the IETF said, well, we'll build a protocol that anybody can build stuff on top of. So let's take advantage of that and use this opportunity to get rid of something that we've been dragging around since the 1980s and go to a modern protocol that really solves a problem and gets everybody's software stack to be much improved. It would be a huge help. So that would be something, and I can imagine actually that my employer, I won't speak for them, but I can imagine that my employer would contribute code to such an effort if it were open sourced.
Thank you, Andrew. Werner?
Werner Staub from CORE. One point also to echo that, what you've been said, there is a format that is easily translatable from JSON, which is called YAML. It's actually used in some of the ICANN systems, for instance, in the pre-delegation testing. Some reports come in that format. It might actually be very easy to translate what is it right now in JSON into YAML, and that's really nicely human readable. I have another question, however, and that is I'd like to understand how this is extensible. Maybe I should use an example. You know, we're looking at one registry that needs a company identifier, and that should actually be under Whois. Now, if you want to have a company identifier under Whois, how can we make sure that this would actually be handled correctly in this environment? And then if we do, can we make sure that somebody else does the same thing, you know, will actually use the same solution rather than having, you know, as an EPP, different extensions for the same thing each time?
I would like to, Mark Blasche, I would like to answer in two ways. One is a generic way, and which is or top-down way. You know, every specific object, we, you know, as we did for this work, is actually we need to find the right way to map it into the RDAP JSON structures, right? So it may be straightforward, take 5 minutes to find the right place, or it may take, you know. An example of this is there's a construct called links where you could refer to another object on, you know, on the internet, a URI or something. Well, that is actually pretty powerful in terms of extensibility already there, because you have all kind of links that are defined for web stuff, not related to RDAP itself. So that's why I'm trying to say there's a lot of extensibility there already possible, and a specific question we will have to, you know, dig down into finding the right solution. But I have pretty good confidence that extensibility is there for that. And the requirement here is, the idea here was that we are aware that people have, you know, additional objects that they want to, you know, carry. And then, as with EPP, that now has a registry of extensions, RDAP already started day one with a registry of extensions so that people will be aware of those extensions, which is an important part of extensibility of a protocol, which is not only extend without, you know, like in the wild, but actually register your extensions so other people know what your extension is. So. And there's no name clash and stuff like that.
If these extensions were to be discussed, would the EPP extensions working group be a good forum to do that? I mean, because they're discussing the same data.
Well, I would not respond for the area director, but who may be in the room. Yeah, I just saw him. But, you know, to be identified, there's multiple routes into ITF, and if it's just an extension of the to be registered in a registry, then you would have to look at the registration policies, and sometimes it says just provide a specification or something. Sometimes it says it's an RFC. So, you know, there's various ways to do it. It doesn't necessarily need a whole working group. But it, to be discussed with the right people, which one of them is in the room.
Rubens?
Now I only have 80 questions. Picking the first one to build on the proxy thing, you are mentioned to get RDAP query statistics on monthly reports, but what if port 43 becomes just a proxy for the RDAP server, so that a request would count against port 43 and against RDAP. So do we really need this kind of granularity of this request comes from port 43, this request comes from WebWhois, this request comes from RDAP? Can we just live with a single number, say, hey, request for information. Could we do that?
This is Francisco. So that's certainly a possibility. The reason why we have it separated right now, for example, in port 43 and web, is to be able to do this kind of analysis. When we designed that report, we were thinking that RDAP was coming, and at some point we may want to decide when to retire port 43. And one possible data point that will help in making that decision is to know how was the behavior of the queries that were received in each of the RDS services. So currently we have port 43 and web-based queries. If we add RDAP, that could give us a data point that could help inform the decision on when to turn off port 43.
But it might not give you that the information that you really want, because all port 43 requests are also counting against RDAP requests, so it will count double if you try to sum them up.
Right, that's why there are separate counters.
But if you do separate counters, you are actually implying that people do separate servers, which is not going to be the case. Most people will do proxy.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Good point.
And actually, our own implementation that will come live in a matter of days, but not in the GTLD space, actually is a proxy. We'll make port 43 a proxy. This will go live in a matter of days or hours. So it's actually running code that is going like this.
Marc Blanchet, I was going to say that I would expect, you know, many people to actually have essentially two interfaces to the same, you know, same database, and then have a shim layer of, and Whois versus RDAP is just a presentation layer that could be proxied, or, you know, and then there's kind of implementation details, which comes to your point, I understand, which is the actual real queries only once, then what you have to, so it depends purpose of the statistics, because what you're saying is where we may be counting in some ways double, but you would have the different interface statistics, which relates to what Francisco said, which is you will know how many coming from, you know, Whois and how many coming from the other thing. So I guess there's pros and cons, but point taken to think about it.
So I have one remote comment, and then Andrew, and then we go back to your comments.
We have a comment from JF Trimbley. He says, some of the statistics for RDAP are different in nature from Whois, such as truncated answers, authentication, etc. These do not exist in Whois statistics.
Okay, thanks. Andrew?
Oh, well, this is just a suggestion. If you're proxying your Whois queries directly to your RDAP, then in every other proxy system where I have operated such things, I just subtract the statistics of the proxy from the things at the real server, and that's how you answer that. Because, right, if 100% of the queries that come into the proxy then go to the real server, then you can just subtract the number that you count at the proxy. So I don't really think that this is a thing to get bogged down into, because that sounds to me like a pretty, you know, detailed implementation issue. Thanks.
Thank you. Joe?
Thanks. Joe Waldron. So I just want to address a couple of points and then probably one or two questions. So from the point that Jim Galvin made, I know he had to step out, but the Thick Whois implementation review team that is meeting later today, you know, one of the objectives that we have is minimizing the kind of the churn and the number of releases. So I think coordinating these so that we're minimizing the impact on us as a registry, as well as all of the registrars, is part of our objective. So I think we're really addressing one of the concerns that Jim brought up. And then Jordan, who I guess is also left, brought up RCEP, which caused my I got a little concerned when he said that, because I hadn't thought that that implementing RDAP would be something that required RCEP. So I'm hoping that there's not going to be a queue of 1,000 RCEPs coming in from 1,000 registry operators. But I think that we do need to have some coordinated mechanism for how this is going to be updated in the contracts. But please don't make everybody go through an RCEP. I would say that I think that in order to speed adoption, I think getting some reference implementations out that we can coordinate and facilitate. I know Scott Hollenbeck, who jumped in earlier, you know, was interested in doing some of that. So I think that's another you know, key event that we ought to be targeting. And then finally, in terms of shutting off the old Whois, you know, my experience is that nothing on the internet ever dies on its own. You know, you change an IP address to a root server, and 15 years later, you're still getting traffic to that old IP address. So there has to be some kind of coordinated communication and identification of the consumers, right, people that are using Whois, but that have built services that rely on that, so that they're even aware that this is coming and that there aren't surprises. So I don't know. And when we make these types of changes, we always have a little bit of difficulty in understanding, you know, how do I do a notification? It's easy if I'm making a change to EPP, I send the notification out to the registrars. If we're making a change to something like Whois, there isn't a standard mechanism for doing that. So I think we need to look at how we communicate that.
Thank you, Joe. This is Francisco again. On the question on the RCEPs, RCEP, by the way, is the Registry Service, is the acronym for Registry Service Evaluation Process or Policy, depending on the context. And that's the process by which GDLE registry requests authorization to ICANN to implement a new service or change one existing service. So there is no intention to make all the GDLE registries to send an RCEP request. I think the idea, and we haven't defined all the details here, is since there is already a provision in the contracts that, for the registries that says that after a certain period of time that I can remember right now, from which I can request the implementation of RDAP, the registries will implement it. So I think we will be relying on that. And point taken on the reiteration of what Jordan said about finding a mechanism for allowing registries to do prototyping of RDAP services. Thanks. Rubens?
Next question is on registrar queries. I noticed that there was no mention in the slides about querying a registrar using its name. Was that on purpose? Is it going to be removed? Say no way. There is one to query registrars by its IN ID. But currently on port 3 GTLDs have to also answer registrar name of the registrar queries, which I don't think are really useful. So if you get rid of that but we could get rid of that on port 43 as well, because usually customers don't know the full name of the registrar. They know like GoDaddy, not GoDaddy Operating Company Inc. So they usually don't get that query right anyways.
So the issue we are dealing with here is that we're trying to have an implementation of RDAP that is not changing the existing contractual requirements. So the existing contractual requirement is about putting for using the name of the registrar. So that's what the profile should be requesting for. So that would be the answer to that. Regarding the lookup for IN ID for the registrar, that's an option that was introduced in the advisory as an optional feature, and therefore that's why we included as one of the points here.
Okay.
We have a remote comment or question.
Yes, it's a comment from J.F. Tremley. Well, actually, there's two. The first one says, there's an item about querying a registrar by name using the FN field in an entity. And what doesn't exist is querying the registrar by its registrar ID. It has to be added.
Right, that's what we were talking about. Any more questions? Oh, you still have more.
Yeah. I saw one slide about name server statuses. That's something that I usually don't see at GTLDs mention what's the status on name servers, like, oh, answering, not answering. But that, it was a mention that in the slide. Will this now be required from GTLDs?
Doesn't ring a bell. Mark?
It was in one of the slides. I couldn't know which one. So.
Can I jump in on that? So Scott's on the phone, I think, so he may have a better idea. But I think it may be for, like, you can lock a name server. So I don't think it's the operational status. I think it's the registry status of the name server.
Okay. Just on name servers, one slide says that name server query is optional, and then there was slides mentioned that is mandatory, so just for clarity or cohesion should be done. You mentioned requiring HTTPS, but will there be a requirement for a set of PKIs that are allowed to sign the certificates, or could be a self-signed certificate or something? But when you establish a policy requiring HTTPS, you need to delineate a guideline what certificates are allowed or not. Even a self-signed certificate, it's allowed, but you should probably specify what do you mean by HPS.
Maybe Dane?
Maybe Dane, yes. One of the slides got me the impression that the type entry was used to represent the IAN ID of the registrar. Is that right? That was one slide that mentioned, the IAN ID will be the type in the query. And that's, if that really holds up, that's really not intuitive that type is the IAN ID. So
it looks strange the way you say it, but.
So I would suggest that these are probably two detailed questions. At this point, it's not really the intention to go into that level. Maybe once we have a proposal, then we can have that sort of feedback. That's okay with you.
One last question that's not that much detailed is, have you looked at CCTLD and IRI profiles to see if they match, if they look almost the same instead of being dissonant with what you are proposing?
Mark Blasche, we didn't look at this the part of this space. It's probably a good exercise that the NRO RRN should probably contemplate to do, just to get consistent response within their community. My take is, there's probably 75-80% of what we're doing right now, which is is not relevant for them, right? But it's a very good point. But I am not aware if they are currently working on this or not. I don't know.
Okay.
Thanks.
Okay. Any more questions? We are 5 minutes before the hour. No, I guess not. Well, thank you very much.